And welcome to another Nucleus Investment Insights. I'm Damien Klassen, and this is Nucleus Wealth. So this week, wanted to talk about boom or bust copper and lithium. So there's been some bit of bounces in both. Started to see a few articles coming out on both of these have sort of been boom materials, so to speak, over the past 2 or 3 years. We were very much hyped. Both had prices fall, and now prices are rising again, and I think it's well worth just re-exploring these two metals. Apologies for yesterday; I was traveling and I forgot to bring a key component for podcasting. So unfortunately we've had to delay it to today, but we are here eventually. So with that said, I just wanted to highlight as well that. Everything you're going to hear today is general advice in nature. It's not personal financial advice. If you do want personal advice, give us a call. You can access NucleusWealth/contact, and we can talk to you about your own specific needs. And with all that out of the way, I will jump straight into it. So I think the main thing I wanted to talk about, was this idea that. We've had a pretty reasonable bounce in both the copper price and the lithium price off their lows. There's talk about copper being the new AI metal. So if you want to play AI, you gotta go out and buy copper. There's lots of stuff going on about lithium and EVs and plenty of changes within that, and so I just really wanted to pull back to some of the fundamentals that we're seeing within these sectors, and just sort of remind people about really what you should be looking for and how you should be thinking about investments in both these metals. So the first thing, I'm going to start with lithium, and I just want to highlight that there's this part about we need lots and lots of lithium, and the counter argument to that is we've got lots and lots of lithium. I've got a chart just sort of up here showing the reserves and resources of the largest lithium mines around, and so you've got that Bolivian one where they've started construction with 39 million tons of lithium there, and then sort of the next biggest is Argentina, and if you go down about 7 or 8 different things, you can see some highlighted in green there, and they're the ones that are actually operating. So of all the biggest lithium deposits, we reserves and resources out there that we know of, takes you out of the top 10 or so. It takes a while before you get to the ones that are actually operating, and Greenbushes. There's the bottom one in Australia. That's sort of the largest producer, and obviously a long way down in terms of the amount of reserves. So that's the Onuni salt flat in Bolivia has literally 10 times as much in terms of production. So we need a lot, but luckily we've got a lot. It's really just a question of timing and costs in terms of how you get lithium out there, and it is. It's perfectly feasible to extract lithium from things like seawater. There's not much there. You probably need lithium prices of, maybe 20 times higher than what they are at the moment. In order to make that sort of feasible from an economic point of view, given technologies. But it's clear that there is certainly enough lithium out there. I think the main thing to focus on though is this idea of supply imbalances. So we had that lithium price rocket up to 100,000 and then fall back down. Come down sort of 80-odd% from there. During that time frame, though, the actual demand growth was really strong. Like, we've got incredibly strong demand growth in lithium. And the issue is we've had even stronger supply growth. And I've just got a chart here. This is actually from 6 months or maybe even 9 months ago. So it's a bit probably out of date for the people who are really tracking this down to the last minute. But what it's just showing is that we're sort of going from 2023 with sort of 500,000 tons of demand, or a little bit more than 500,000 tons of demand, going four times that out to 2030. So in a very short period of time, we're just doubling and doubling again for the amount that's being demanded. And the issue is with metals is and commodities in general is when you've got too much of it, the price falls, and when you've got too little of it, the price rises. And so trying to work out those balances and you know, did demand grow by 30%, but supply only grew by 25%, and therefore the price booms? Or did demand grow by 25% and supply grew by 30%, and so the price crashes? That's sort of this whole key to these medium and long term. And so, you know, for me in lithium, you know, it's just worth noting that, look, nobody knows what's going to happen with this. If the price is near $100, all these mines are going to come on much faster. $100,000, all these mines are going to come on a lot faster. If the prices are sort of down around $10,000, then there might be some mines even get shut down. And so, you know, working out these balances is really a guessing game. And it's really about knowing, you know, the big picture economics for lithium mining. There's if you look at some of the the bulls out there at the moment are pointing to inventories for lithium are starting to fall off and you know, showing signs that maybe this restocking cycle, and you know, because what generally happens is mines are pumping lots of, if they're pumping too much out, then the next sort of stage will be storing that or processing it and then storing the processed materials. And so you see these inventory buildups, and then eventually when the inventories are too high for too long, then you start seeing the cancellation of orders and things like that. So, you know, I guess what I'd like to say is that, look, this is really for traders. So if you're investing in a stock, you're investing in a lithium miner, look, this thing's going to be producing for 10, 20 years. Whether we've got some short-term inventory overbuilds or underbuilds, yeah, it's definitely going to affect the lithium price itself. But really, that longer term price, which is what you care about, if you're going to buy a stock that's going to be producing for the next 10 or 20 years, it's not the inventories are a guide as to what where things are going. That they shouldn't be like something they're going to use to come up with your longer term price. You know, you can use it as a guide to say, well, when prices get this high, then an inventory is low, and when prices get that low, you know, you can use that type of thing. So what you really do need to look at is the idea of these cost curves. Now, I've got a chart up here, which is just showing the 2022 lithium production cash costs. And so with the idea that we've got these, it's for anyone sort of listening in on the podcast, it's for the first half of the curve is sort of all under $4,000 per ton in terms of production costs. And you're looking at, most of those mines are going to be your hard rock producers. So what that means is these are people who are literally mining the rock, crushing it up, then extracting the lithium from that crushed up rock. And that's different to the brine. And the brine is mostly, that's where you see that second half of the curve. They're the guys mostly in South America, is most of those are the salt flats are brine, where you're effectively pumping water down, getting or pumping it, if the water's already there, pumping up the lithium rich water and then extracting the lithium from that brine. And that's a higher cost. And so most of that cost is then in the processing of it, as opposed to the mining. And so so trying to work out where that sort of fits. The other thing you can see is that royalty figure, which I've got on there, is the orange. And so on those brine, the royalty figure is a very big number. Now, that matters because most royalties are based on the price. And so this might look like it's so say I've got a mine where, like in this one, where I'm saying, okay, it cost me $4,000 to pull it out of the ground, and then you're adding another $2,000 in royalty costs, and to give you $6,000 in total. Well, if the price fell to say $5,000, the royalty prices that they might halve as well, so you might actually still be cash flow positive, or royalty might even fall further than $5,000. It might, you know, that you might still be cash flow positive, even though on this chart. So royalties generally have a price sort of built into it. So they're a bit more flexible than they might look on some of these. The big picture, though, for this is that, you know, at $10,000, most of the current mines are profitable. And certainly on a cash flow basis. And what I mean by that is mining is this capital intensive project, usually, where you've got to spend a lot of money up front, and then your ongoing costs are a lot smaller. So you might look at, say, at $10,000 of lithium, I might be looking at a new mine and I'm like, no, nah, I'm not starting this thing because I've got to spend all this money up front. And then my operating cost, I might be able to, you know, produce it for only $5,000 a ton, but it's just not worth spending that all that upfront capital for only get the difference between that, you know, my costs. Whereas once you've opened a mine, now you're running costs. So yeah, I would never have started this if my new prices were going to be $10,000, but now prices are $10,000. I'm going to keep going because, you know, I'm still producing at a rate lower than that. So yeah, it's still it's still worth doing. So I guess where I'm getting to with this is, yeah, lithium prices to me, when you're talking about prices of, you know, $10,000 or $10,000 to $15,000, yeah, I'm probably a buyer at those levels, you know, subject to you know, everything else that's going on, and you know, there's other stuff that can happen. In the sort of $15,000 to $25,000, say. Now I'm more neutral, and above 25,000, maybe above 30,000, I'm starting to back out, and certainly, you know, anything 60,000 or 70,000 above, and I'm thinking, well, you know, yeah, it's a bubble. The bubble could get bigger. There could be real shortages and all that type of stuff, but I'm certainly not expecting that a $50,000 or $60,000 price is going to stay for any reasonable period of time. When you get a $50,000 or $60,000 price, there are hundreds of mines that will be wildly profitable at those levels, and they'll be out there, producing. And as I said, I feel like it was about 100,000, maybe it's a little bit more, maybe it might be 150,000, where you could actually say, well, you know, at that level, it's worth me doing seawater and pulling out lithium. So there's definitely limits about how those prices go, and it all comes back to those fundamentals of what we're doing. So yes, treat this bounce as a nice bounce. Prices have sort of come off that sort of, they fell to sort of 13,000-14,000, and now they sort of headed back up. Look like they could get to 20. You know, I'm still mildly positive. From fundamental. Well, actually, I'd even say positive from these levels. But you know, it's not a despite the growth, it's still worth coming back to that idea that there is a price for everything, and you should have a rough idea of what your price is as you're going into these, and what that means for the profitability of the companies which you're looking at. And because the irony within mining companies, and I'm going to use lithium very much as an example, is that valuation metrics are often the wrong things to be looking at. You often want to be buying these on a high price to earnings ratio and selling them on a low price to earnings ratio, the opposite to others. And why do I mean that? It sounds the wrong way, but the reason why is because when the lithium price is $100,000, companies are making money hand over fist. Nobody wants to pay 20 times earnings on something that's earning on that $100,000, because you know that $100,000 is not going to last. There's going to be a wave of new mines coming on, and those prices are going to fall. And by the same token, when prices hit, you know, $10,000, and the company's making no money at all or very small amounts, yeah, I might be prepared to pay 100 times for it, because I know that when prices go from $10,000 to $15,000, actually they're going to go from making almost no money to making lots of money. And so, it's a little bit reverse from a lot of the other trends. And that's part of the reason why, in the charts you'll see that we often put up is that we'll strip out strip out resources from a lot of the valuation stuff we do, just so that we can get a clearer view about what's happening. So that's lithium. Copper is, I wanted to bring that one up as well, because it's undergoing a rebranding process at the moment, where a number of people are talking about it as the AI metal. You know, if you want to get exposure to artificial intelligence, then you need to buy copper. And I believe they're saying it unironically. It does, I'll tell you the grain of truth behind this is that The data center use is certainly booming in terms of the amount of power the data centers are using. AI does take a lot of power at current levels. And so, you know, you can look at, and the IEA did a study looking at the amount of extra power that's going to be needed for AI. And there's lots of assumptions that go into that. But yeah, just showing that there's a pretty reasonable increase in terms of the amount of power. So, okay, so that's on one side. The next part is then saying, okay, well, what does that mean for copper? So in theory, that means more, you're going to more transmission wires, you're going to need more wiring within data centers and more data centers and things like that. And so it's great, but it's just a drop in the bucket, like of the total copper demand. It's such a small part. And the other thing is there's so much uncertainty within that. So the latest NVIDIA chip, so they just had a bit of a their annual sort of unveiling. I feel like it was in the last 2 weeks, might have even been the last week of their new chips. And the new chip uses 25 times less power than the old one. So there's certainly you're certainly looking at increases in the amount of computing power. But yeah, I guess what I'm saying is that the chip manufacturers are well aware of the power issues with current ones and trying actively to offset that. And so, you know, I think there's making a bet that I want to buy copper because of data centers, which is a very small part of the overall copper usage, and very uncertain. To me, is a little bit of a stretch. The other thing then is EVs, so electric vehicles, and so we do have sort of significant production going on in China and a price war. There's also sort of a bit of overcapacity at the moment, but I feel as if the electric vehicle overcapacity is probably a bit under. It's probably a little bit oversold as well in terms of how bad it is for the demand for electric vehicles. So they are growing really quickly. So you're still talking about 25-30% growth in a lot of these electric vehicle markets. The problem was manufacturers were expecting 40 or 50% growth, and so as objectively, when you look at the growth numbers, they're still good. They're just not as good as what manufacturers are starting to be, which is why you've got the pile up of electric vehicles. The other things going on in copper is you have there's some short term stuff going on. So you've got a copper smelting cuts in China. A lot of that's due to the really low margins that they've been earning. So basically, why are they earning low margins? Well, because they've got lots of copper pouring in and they haven't got enough demand coming out the other side. And so, and lots of spare capacity. And so the amount they can charge has just been ratcheting down. And so copper refiners shutting down and that sort of meaning that the proper copper price is jumping. Okay, that's a good short-term measure if you're another refiner. It's not a good indication of how well things are going in the industry, though. That margins, there's so much capacity and margins so bad, therefore price must rise, is not a, you know, that logically doesn't fit. When you see, it's a bit, you know, in a way, a lot of that refining, you know, I think of it a lot like being a farmer. So if I'm a farmer and I'm growing corn or whatever, I actually want really bad corn weather and conditions, except for my farm, because then I'm going to boom. Like if my competitors in the US have a terrible season and I'm growing corn in Australia, that's great for me, because you know the demand stays the same or whatever, but all the supply disappears. And it's the same in these refining ones. Is that that's effectively what we're seeing now. Is if you are a refiner and you just saw a bunch of Chinese ones shut down, that's great for you, but as an industry as a whole, it's not a good thing. And then the other one you've got is a lot of, so there's a lot of protests and some mine closures in Peru and Panama, which is affecting supply. One of the mines there, I think, is sort of about 2% of world production, and is having protests and things like that. And so yes, that's a good thing for the copper price if you're invested directly in the copper price. If you're a copper producer, It helps you very much at the short term, but it's not sort of something which you should be then factoring into your model and saying, yeah, there's going to be protests for the next 20 years, the entire life of my copper mine, and these things are going to be shut down or blocked or whatever it is for the next 20 years, and so therefore the copper price will be higher. It's, yeah, there's certainly you will see these eventually come back. And so if you're investing in stocks, you get a short-term cash boost, but you've still got to carry this thing with the rest of it. So whereas trading the metals, maybe you've got some more benefit there. It is worth sort of touching on some of our fundamentals for copper as well. So the other big bull, so copper's been very much, what you're seeing is it's coming out the whole thought process that copper is the green metal and the one that's going to benefit the most from electric vehicles and from power. And that is true. The issue I have with that theme is that, again, it's a small part, and it's not the whole story. So you'll see out there a number of different people use electric cars use 3 or 4 times as much copper as a conventional car. Now that could be true. Like you can make a car if you wanted to. I could find examples where people have made cars and made particular choices of chemistry and types of motors and wiring and cars and things like that. We do get 3 or 4 times much, but the typical car does not. The IEA is a pretty good source of that, and I've got a chart up just showing theirs. And this is showing about a little bit, around about twice as much copper goes into an electric car as what goes into a conventional car. Then when you look at the levels of, say, offshore wind, there's stacks of copper goes into offshore wind. But now you come back to onshore wind, solar, nuclear, coal, it's not dramatically more. Rooftop solar PV if the more of that you get, you cut out some of this transmission, so you sort of get negative and positive, about depending on how far you need to go. But I guess the net effect of all that is shown on this next chart that I've got, where they put together a few different scenarios and going, okay, well, if copper in solar, for example, is 400,000 tons at the moment, and by 2030 we could see that be 500,000 tons, and under these various different scenarios maybe you could get up to 1 million tons if you're over the next 20 odd years if you sort of went with quite aggressive scenarios in terms of copper. Well, that's great, but the issue is 1 million tons of copper is just not that much, especially over 20 odd years. So over 20 years, 1 million tons of copper, so we need an extra 50,000 tons per annum of extra production. Well, global copper is 31 million. So, 50,000 tons. Look, I'm not saying it's bad, but it's just not earth shattering for it. It's such a small percent of existing production that it just really doesn't make a difference. And it sort of comes back to that same part for electric vehicles is, look, for an electric vehicle, you can certainly come up with scenarios where you use a lot more copper, but again, it's just not that big as a total proportion. All right, just bring up my chart. And the other, I guess the bigger issue is you've got to make an assumption that driverless cars are not going to work, because if driverless cars, which, seem to be making, well, the Google ones at least said, we're making reasonable headway. A couple of the new announcements out over the last week about the startups in LA and startups in Austin as well. If they boom, then the amount of cars, well, the usage of cars, the capacity usage could rise quite dramatically. So what I mean by that is we produce about 100 million cars every year. And most of those cars sit in garages, all their life. They drive 10,000 kilometers a year and really don't get used very much. Whereas if you go, okay, we're actually getting lots more driverless cars, and so rather than being 100,000 cars, 100 million cars a year, produced, is we're actually only producing 50 million cars. But of those 50 million cars, 20 of them are ending up as driverless taxis that drive all day long and rack up way more kilometers. Then we might end up needing, the same amount of copper or even less copper than what we've got at the moment. I guess the big picture is, there is a lot of copper out there. I've sort of got this chart up sort of showing the years of mine life that we have. And so at current levels of production, well, basically for the last 50 odd years, we've had 30 to 50 years of, or 30 to 60 years of mine life, you know, regardless of how fast we've seen that copper increase. And the biggest factor though in copper, one other thing is that the grades, that's the other one you often see on copper. And then the other big factor I want to talk about is the Chinese housing market. But in terms of the copper grades is that, yeah, look, you'll see this part where people talk about such small grades and you know, we're getting sort of, you know, 0.4% copper now, whereas, you know, in the early 1900s, it used to be 4%. And that's perfectly true. And I'd even go back though and say in the 1800s, it used to be 15%. So, copper grades have been falling for forever, you know, over the last, you know, 150 odd years. The issue is though, in the 1800s, you know, you had people with a pick and shovel. And even in the early 1900s, it wasn't far removed. You know, maybe there's a bit of more dynamite blasting, but really was nothing like what we've got today. Today we're all talking about automated and there's some automated production. There's sort of these mass doing a lot more sort of mass mining underground, and the techniques and the things they're using are just improving. And so yes, we've got falling grades, but on the flip side, we've got improving technologies. And so and the two of them have been cancelling out. And if you look at sort of the longer term price changes within copper, is that you can very much see that within the longer term price chart. So if you're talking about real copper prices I'm using 2022 dollars, is that, you know, they range between $3,000 a ton and to up to sort of $12,000 a ton over most of that time frame, and sort of we're sort of around about 9 or 10 at the moment. It's sort of toward the upper end. It's not outrageously high. It's not outrageously low. It's sort of just in that band where we've seen production is profitable for people producing at these levels. If prices go higher, then people want to produce more of it. If prices go lower, then they want to produce less. It's not so far out of whack. So whereas if you said to me that you're looking at copper prices of $11,000-$12,000 a ton or higher, so copper prices rose say 20%, I'd be saying look out for the next sort of flood of supply over the next few years. If you had copper prices of $3,000 or $4,000, I'd be saying, well, okay, well. There's obviously a big oversupply of it at those points. We need to work out when are things shutting down, but your medium term outlook would be relatively strong for it. You obviously want to avoid the copper miners that would get shut down, but it's sort of a question about as long as you're picking somebody who's going to make it through the cycle, then you're getting then there's a reasonable amount of investment. And the big picture for copper, though, is that way bigger than say cars and at least the same size cars. I think no, it's bigger than cars. Is Chinese it's not way bigger, slightly bigger than cars. Is Chinese housing, and I've just got some charts up from the latest Chinese housing starts, and they just keep falling. So they now I don't believe these numbers. In terms of the actual levels of numbers, when you do all the additions and everything like that, they just don't add up. There's definitely problems with it. But I think the trends are probably right. And what the trend's showing is, you peaked at 1.5 sort of billion sets of new housing starts, or above 1.5 for back in the sort of late 2010s and higher early 2020s. And we've fallen, well over 50% from there. It's probably down more like 60 or 70%. Completions are falling as well. We're sort of back to the levels we last saw in the late 2000, early 2000, sorry. So 2005 to 2007, those types of levels. So, to come up with a bullish view, a bullish long-term view on copper, based on the whole, we haven't got enough of it, green materials, all that type of stuff like that, is you need to then balance that out. What are we getting in green materials? How much are we losing from Chinese property? And if you're basically saying, well, Chinese property is going to come roaring back and they're going to produce lots more of it, and you're not going to get more recycling in China, and you're going to get lots of EVs, and you're not going to get driverless cars, and you're going to have all the technology sort of chosen, then yeah, sure, I'm sort of on board with that as a case. But I just don't think those logical steps sort of all fit together. So, so that's the sort of brief summary. You're going to see, certainly we're seeing it at the moment, as I said, copper is the new AI mineral. If you want to get exposure to AI, go out and buy copper is what people are saying. And I very much disagree with that. I think you will get incremental gains at the margin, but don't sort of buy that whole argument. And lithium, mildly positive at these low levels. Just sort of keep in mind that lithium cost over the entire cycle. And also, I didn't talk about some of the other battery technologies that are kicking in. I think it's safe to say that if you're talking about, there is an existential risk, I suppose, to lithium that one of the other ones, say a sodium ones, sort of come out with a more cost-effective product. But I think it's also safe to say that, look, we're locked into lithium for a while now. Battery technologies don't change quickly. There's still a fair bit of lead-acid batteries that get used. So these are technological processes that are going to last a long time. And a lot of the allure of different metals, say sodium, is a lot of that's cost-based. Lithium tends to be more efficient at a lot of these. And so at lower prices, lithium, at $100,000 a ton, all of a sudden sodium looks better. At $10,000 a ton, all of a sudden lithium's regained. It's fallen 90%. It's regained a lot of that basis. Lithium, very much keep an eye on those growth rates and keep that long term prices in mind as you put them through. Anyway, that's it's just a quick one today. So thanks everyone for listening in. We will be back next week on our usual slot, 12:30 on Thursdays. Look forward to seeing everyone then. Also want to note that if you do want to get, hit the like and subscribe button. If you do want to get more info, you can register on Nucleus Wealth to be contacted. You can get us this podcast on YouTube, plus all the major podcast providers, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify. If you want to get us through social media, we're on all the different, or most of the different social medias. You can see the links there. And I will look forward to seeing everyone next week. Thanks.